This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is brought to you by Lightstream, the nation's premier online consumer lender. Lightstream offers low-interest fixed-rate loans from $5,000 to $100,000 for practically any purpose. It's also brought to you by our newest Patreon member and past guest, Jenny H. Yes, Jenny. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you. I couldn't do this without you. Thank you. I am so grateful to all of you Patreoners who are making this show a possibility.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Angela and Jess.
Hey, hey.
Hello.
Happy Monday.
Okay, so Angela and Jess are back to help me introduce the interview that's coming in. Angela and Jess are from, I think we go way back to season 5, episode 16. Then, and also, you were back again, season 9, episode 13. So you have two episodes.
That's right.
Can you give a recap, as best you can, to our listeners? Who are you two, and why do you keep coming back?
I don't know, because we're gluttons for punishment,
no.
I think. Nah, because we love you too much.
I love you too.
Okay, so we've been together for a long time. We met at Columbus Pride. I decided to get pregnant first, and I had HELLP syndrome. That's the first episode we recorded.
HELLP.
Right. Yes. And
gave birth to our beautiful son, who is now 3 and a half. God. His name is Joan.
Yeah, going on 13.
Yes.
And then now we're in the process, which we should say not in process because it's been almost 24 months.
Oh, shit.
Right.
Of getting Ange pregnant.
So our second episode was kind of updates of where we were.
We are full of content.
Oh, Yeah. So I did 4 IUIs. And I think when we recorded in season 9, I was about to head into IUI number 2. Ugh. And it hasn't worked. So we went through an IVF process. So we've done 1 cycle of IVF.
Oh, shit.
With retrieval. The, yeah, retrieval. Okay.
Retrieval. That
at transfer. The only place that would work with me based on my BMI, which is ridiculous. That was like 2 hours away that I had to go to this clinic every other day, basically, right. As they, you know, did a 15-minute meeting with us to look at my uterus, mm-hmm. and
more uteruses, but yeah. You don't have a
more
unicorn.
Uteri.
You don't have a unicorn.
Yeah, so this
uterus,
is so it's so funny. Wait, this is not funny because it's sad that this is an ongoing process for you, but it's funny that y'all are here to introduce this interview, because the two that are coming in, Maria and Jill, had a really interesting baby-making journey as well with a unicorn uterus. Yeah. And like,
that's the good and bad in our intentional families, is we know so much more about our bodies than the typical person.
Mm-hmm. At least through this process.
You know? Yeah. So her finding that out is unfortunate, you know, but it's also good in the long run that she can make those decisions.
Okay, so the Maria and Jill, you know, the first one gave birth and it was kind of difficult, and now they're trying to decide about if they want to have a second, and that's what you were just speaking to, Jess, and they're kind of grappling with it. Mm-hmm. The fact that there is really so little research done on bodies that contain uteruses, that all the time we're learning about these horrendous things that can happen in the freaking moment. Case in point with your HELP syndrome that happened to y'all, and then what Maria and Jill find out in their baby making process. And it's like, mm-hmm. baffling to me. And just to be transparent, they did suffer a miscarriage, and it was what was called a silent miscarriage, silent. Which was new to me. And then there was like
new to them too.
Yes.
Yeah. And how common it is.
How common. And then why are we learning? Why is there not enough education and research done on our bodies? And it pisses me off.
Well, and to that note, also, why is there not a lot of comfort care given to those women who are experiencing that, and or, you know, uterus having people, I should use the correct terminology, anyone of us who have uteruses who are going through something like mm-hmm. that, there's a whole aspect to medical care that's being ignored. Yeah. It's still a huge process to try to get pregnant, you know, to go through the selection, and then to find out you are pregnant, and then like just a couple of weeks later, figure out something's not going mm-hmm. the way that you thought it would. And maybe if it was, you know, a heterosexual baby making way type of situation, you may not have even known that you were pregnant at that point. But we're fully invested in these families. So even though it's very common, you know, it still doesn't negate the fact that those couples, those people need comfort care, and more resources should be provided. It wasn't for them. At least that's what I gathered from the episode.
Yeah, like,
and
they barely
told them a hug.
They barely told her. They barely told her in the room, and then she was like, "I have to sit here and process this."
You know what? Yeah. I think y'all could just do the whole interview, and
I left. Sorry, we're giving a lot of spoilers, aren't we?
It's okay.
Sorry. I mean, really. At the end of the day, it's 100% worth it. Like, as much as our kid is a pain in the ass and, you know, these processes to getting pregnant, we wouldn't have these wonderful, beautiful stories to share with people.
Yeah.
Not only those stories are wrapped in education to people on how queer families are made, which is so important, which is why we have this podcast. So that,
and the book, right?
Oh my God. They just held out my book.
I've been reading.
Me and Robin's book. Oh, I love that. Yay.
It's my book for the month.
Oh my God. Thanks for reading the book. And if y'all want to go buy it, you can buy If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Baby. Is that it? I haven't said it in so long. Wherever you buy books. And we also have an audio book, which is read by myself and Robin Hopkins, my previous co-host. But I'm so, because you're in the thick of it right now. You really are. Y'all are trying to get pregnant. And
we're waiting for
grass grows faster than our process.
We're waiting for a frozen transfer, trying to figure all that out.
Okay, because you did the retrieval. And did you get it?
And we only got one.
Not a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I am older. There's a lot of other things that go into that. There are different things that depend on your age and the quality of your eggs and things like that. Even though all of my tests were good and I had lots of follicles that looked like follicles. Sometimes you don't know the difference between a cyst and a follicle. Right. And I do have polyovarian cystic syndrome. So like, or polycystic ovarian syndrome, one of those things. So you just don't know. But now we know we have one chance. And of course, also keeping in mind with how things go in our life, we did test it. We tested the embryo and then it was inconclusive because they didn't get enough
of the
cells or something.
Do you get a refund on that?
No, luckily I have insurance.
It was paid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thankfully, but
yeah,
if I want a refund on the freaking whole IVF process.
You only got one egg, right?
It was a faster than a quick oil change. I mean, I went in there, she went back, and I was like, she just went back.
I was looking forward to a nap. And then I also had to think about and ask the questions to our doctor. What happens if at 9 weeks when we do the genetic testing, since we weren't able to get conclusive results, what happens at that point being in the Midwest if I have to have a medical abortion?
Oh, shit.
You know?
Oh,
so,
shit.
Right. Things to think about.
Oh, my God.
Bottom line is you should not have to go through this.
Yeah.
Right. Bottom line.
Yeah.
You should be able to have medical access in every freaking state. It shouldn't matter.
Mm-hmm. You should be able to do what you need to do.
This is a whole other podcast, which I'm sure we're happy to come back to.
But, as someone who lives in a state where there's the heartbeat bill and then the state where my physician is, there are like no options whatsoever. I had to get confirmation from him that he had connections in other states where that could be an option if I needed to go to that.
We will get you in the right area.
Oh my God. Just ridiculous.
It's like an underground railroad.
It really is medical care. This is medical
care
for people with uteruses. That's what this episode should be called.
It could be what the fuck too. But yeah, I mean,
you know, we are, you know, as cisgendered, you know, women, mm-hmm. we're kind of at an advantage even when we're talking about, you know, other people who have uteruses who are trying to have families and they're already going through their own issues as well, just trying to find providers who will work with them.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a transgender or agender, however you, present yourself to
them. Yeah, wherever you are on the spectrum.
There's a whole different level medical care that...
Right now it's bad.
Right now it's very scary.
Shoot, you're going to need to save all this for a second episode.
I tell you, I'm trying to reel myself back right now.
All of you at home, this conversation went all kinds of places. We talked way longer than we were planning to, but we couldn't put the whole conversation into the intro. So if you want to watch the rest of this conversation on video, you have to head to Patreon. Ooh. Go to the Patreon.
Yeah.
It's going to be there. This conversation, we go deep into some other topics and it's really hard to stop talking to Angela and Jess.
Things that need to be talked about, things that need to be on the airways.
Yeah. This was beautiful. This has been amazing.
Aww.
We have to tell you know who to roll that tape. Would y'all like to do the honors? The two ladies who are
necking
in the corner.
That's true. Helen and Beulah.
Where did Beulah come from?
She's new.
And
did you know that Helen entered the podcast the very first time we were on the podcast?
Oh, that's you were the beginning of Helen.
We were the beginning of Helen.
We were Helen's conception.
Yeah, you manifested Helen right before we came on the podcast.
Oh my God.
And now here we are, introing them, right? Helen and Biela, roll the tape.
Queer Family Podcast.
Wait, Helen, before you rolled that tape, this is Jamie's daughter, Rose. I have to tell you that you should join my mom's Patreon. Patreon. My mom works really hard on the show, but even with the sponsors, she really doesn't make enough profit to hire a real assistant or a team. So please go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast and join now. You'll do a good thing and get bonus contact. She really loves this stuff.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Well, hello, Jill and Marie.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm very excited to have you. And let's just jump right into it, shall we? Let's just jump right into your elevator pitch. Tell us who you are, why you're here in 30 seconds or less. Good luck. On your mark. Get set. Go.
All right. Jill and Marie here. We both swiped right. We fell in love and decided we wanted to get married. Somehow totally accidentally proposed to each other on the same day, which was magical. Did the marriage thing, the house thing, and decided we wanted to start a family. So we went through the fertility clinic and sperm donor. And after 3 IUIs, we have our now 18-month-old daughter, Nora. And now we're trying to decide, do we grow our family again or do we just get a dog?
Boom. That was good. That was
30 ooh, seconds.
That was right on time. You practiced. You practiced.
A couple times in my car. I did. I'm not going to lie.
I love that.
I'm very competitive. So that's awesome. Yeah, you just won. Sure.
That was perfect. That was amazing. And you managed to get the dog in there in true lesbian fashion. So I'm really proud of you.
Of course.
Absolutely. Really
proud. And just for the record, you can always get a dog on top of the other kid. Not put them on top, but you know what I mean? Like you could always, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. I would recommend waiting. Don't do them at the same
There's
time.
There's options.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's dig in. So you swiped right. Does that mean you met on a dating app?
Yes. Tinder. Yes. The dating app. Yeah. I honestly do think you had a picture of you and your dog at the time. I did. That was a selling point.
Yeah. And I think you were reading or something. So
as you do.
Yeah.
Perfect fit.
All the stereotypes. But yeah. And then I think I asked you out on the first like 3 dates. I really went for it. And then from there it was just
I get a lot of crap for that too, because I didn't ask you out at all till but then like date 4, I was like all in and you were probably like, whoa.
What happened?
A little bit more.
We have the thing where, like, I vividly remember her just bringing like an overnight bag, like a very stocked, like, oh, I'm sticking around kind of
which
thing.
I adamantly deny.
Yeah.
But
it happened.
So when you met, had you both been living that lesbian lifestyle?
Yes. But not for very long. I mean, I think we were both pretty late bloomers, right? I mean, I didn't really come out per se until I was like 25, maybe 26 or so. And then I had met you at like 28 maybe.
Yeah. I had just started dating girls like the 6 months prior. So you were like,
yeah, I guess
like
I was a little
third
bit
or fourth. Yeah. Yeah. You had a little bit more going on there.
Okay. So beautiful, things are hunky dory. And then the proposal happens. What happened here? What is going on? This is so, I feel like this is just like the lesbian story.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Yeah. So we were dating about 2 years at this point and, you know, talked about wanting to get married and we kind of landed on that I would be the one proposing, you know, because you're just more romantic and I'm soulless at times. So it was like, oh, let's do something like fun and exciting for her, you know, a fun surprise.
Pause for a second, because I'm just thinking back to before my wife proposed to me, and it was like, this is something I haven't thought about. There is kind of a discussion. Well, for us, there was a discussion on who was going to be the one to propose, and it was decided between the two of us. This is so funny that you're bringing me back to this, that she would propose. I was like, obviously you propose. That's something that's unique to our relationships. That's so funny that you bring that up. Yeah.
And I feel like we kind of knew too, like when we started talking, that I would do it. Like it was just kind of like, oh yeah, you would be the one. But it would kind of landed on that reason being so like, you know, it'd be nice to have, you know, you have like the surprise and whatever. We figure out the rings. And so then we'd kind of both have them on hand. You know, so when I proposed, she'd kind of could be ready to propose back.
Wait. You were going to propose and then Marie, you were going to propose back? That was the plan?
I don't know, even know if I thought it through that much.
Well, I think we wanted to have the ring.
I'm so bad.
I know, memories are terrible. I thought we wanted to have the ring on hand. So then it was like, you know, if you were able to, like, you know, not too long after be able to kind of like propose back kind of thing.
She's probably
like, have the ring. Like, then we could do it that way versus like waiting a while to get the ring.
Look at us queer stepping outside the box with this proposal plan.
Right?
I love it. So outside the box. Okay.
So then it didn't take me too long. I planned for like that April. We had like a little long weekend getaway to Ogunquit, Maine, which we like loved and had been to. So it's like a special place place for us. And, you know, I had this idea, there's, you know, the marginal way there, which is like this beautiful, you know, seaside, like cliff walk.
But meanwhile, I had the same idea. So I remember in my head being like, well, she's just not going to do it for a while. So I'm just going to have this plan in my head and like, just do it. And I also was like, this is going to be so much more surprising to her, because I've been like dropping these hints and whatnot. Right, so I was like, I'm just going to take the reins. So it's like what you're describing, your plan was mine.
It's like
in the same spot and everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
So we get down to Maine and yeah, I have this idea of this, you know, in your head, right? This, you know, it's nice and there's beautiful, you know, cliff sidewalk and whatever, that's where I'm going to do it. And it was like this fluke of a snowstorm. Like it was like hail and like a couple of inches in like the middle of April.
Oh.
And you know, so we were just kind of nervous about that. And, you know, so we're obviously both in our own heads, just kind of nervous about our plan, and we, you know, just head to the bar and I think I have a couple drinks pretty quickly. We were so not subtle about things too. Like you had
a massive bag with me.
You had a massive bag that had this eventually like the sign in it that said like, will you marry me? I had like a champagne bottle probably just like sticking out of my purse.
Yeah, so it's like, not call each other out at that point. We're both just downing drinks. And then we're like, let's go for a walk. Yeah, it's a blizzard.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful day for a walk. So we, you know, probably kind of tipsy, like huddle up in our, you know, coats and start going on this walk. And start going on this walk. And we sit down like on a log looking, you know, out the ocean. And Marie starts to show me on her phone. She starts to play a video and it's like this compilation of like pictures of us, you know, mixed to some music. So it was like super cute. Still hadn't really dawned on me then that you were doing anything. I'm still like in my head, like, okay, like this is great, but let me get going here on my proposal. And then the last like picture in the video is Marie holding a sign that says, will you marry me? Yeah.
I was just like, and then you're like, wait.
I pulled like the ring out of my pocket. It was just like, but like, just could not speak either. Like, you know, I think I just was like, you know,
you did though. You did a great proposal. Like, and I was so nervous at that point that I was glad that she hijacked it, because I was like speechless.
I did
hijack it. I was like, can the video speak for me?
He's like, I made a video. Yeah. I just need an answer. I'm not speaking anymore. That's it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you saw it. What do you say?
Yeah, we both kind of blacked out for a bit, each of us. I think, you were bawling. And so then I was able to kind of like, get down on one knee and kind of do the full proposal piece.
And there was actually people watching us from above that were clapping that I didn't even realize they were there until after the fact. And I'm like, oh my God, there's like 15 people like watching us right now. Yeah. Oh, but it's funny how you black out your entire environment when you're that nervous. I'm like, oh, there's people out there.
And then you both said yes. And then it was like, and the rest is history. No, there's a lot more history to unpack, actually.
Yes.
Okay, folks, we know that queer baby making costs some money in most cases. It costs some money. And some of us, before we start that baby making process, we want to take control of any debt we may have. We want to get our money in order. And so if one of your goals this year is to take control of your credit card debt, I have a way for you to do it. You can pay off your credit cards faster with a low fixed rate loan from Lightstream and start saving that money to make them babies or buy a house or whatever it is you want to do. Like, I'm not assuming you all just want to make babies, but chances are you might, because you're listening to this show. So listen up. A credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream can help you pay off your credit cards and lock in a low fixed interest rate. Rates start at 7.99% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. Plus, the rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. And you can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees, which I love. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. And just for the Queer Family Podcast listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/OCT. That's LIGHTSTREAM.com/OCT. Disclaimer, subject to credit approval. Rates range from 7.99% APR to 23.99% APR and include a 0.5% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/OCT. For more information, just go do that. Make those babies.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Why don't we skip ahead? So you get married. When does the family planning come into picture?
I would say like probably a year in or so. So we always knew we wanted to have kids, like kid or kids or whatnot. And I think like we had bought our house like in February. And I think by the time it was maybe April or May, we started the process.
But that was also like 2020. So like 2020. COVID just just started too.
Yes. We had known sort of that I was going to do it first. You know, I just kind of wanted to do it one time and sort of want it done type of thing. So
like to carry actually, and experience like the whole.
Yeah. We had our donor sort of picked out before that too. We kind of went through a search, which is kind of overwhelming. There were so many choices.
Let's unpack that donor search, shall we?
Yeah.
I think I know it was a little bit difficult.
Well, so I'm like the type that like, I just like to do research on like everything to the point where it's probably detrimental at times. So like we had paid for like the monthly membership and then I went through like so many donors and like got it down to three. And then I think you got your own list. And it was just funny because like our lists were like the personalities of the people we chose were so different. And I think at that point, too, it was more about like obviously we're concerned about like health history, medical history. Like we kind of didn't really want a whole lot of that. But like,
yeah, we were on the same page about that. I think you wanted for sure.
Yeah, I think you wanted someone, correct me if I'm wrong, more like funny and like social. And I was like, well, yeah, that's important. But like I want them to also be like grounded and intelligent. And so we had kind of found like a middle donor that like made a couple jokes because we got like an audio too and we got to listen to him. I think that really kind of sold me on that. So we actually made that decision. And then the next day I got a call saying, hey, are you really interested? Because I kind of put like 7 vials on hold, I believe. And they had gotten so many calls like overnight, like, hey, if you're interested, you need to like kind of move forward with this because they were going to sell out. And I was like, this is our person.
This was at like a major, one of the bigger sperm banks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think at that point we're like, this is our person. Let's do it. I thankfully didn't have any fertility issues initially. And so like, I think we kind of went into it thinking, oh, this is great. I got my first IUI and got pregnant right away.
Wow. And you had bought 7 vials.
Yes.
Which is wise because you don't know how long it's going to take. So, and especially if he's getting bought up, you want to buy what you need, right? So,
no. Right. And he was sold out at that point, like only sibling only after we got our vials.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so we had gotten pregnant on the first try. And, you know, I think I was kind of naive about it, to be honest. I think like, you think everything's going to be fine and you're like, this is wonderful. And you're kind of like in that happy zone. But I think like it's so early and you just don't think of maybe the negative things that could happen. And I think like, because we had IUI, we had a 7 or 8 week, 7 week ultrasound, I think. So everything seemed fine, normal. I went in and again, this was during COVID. So I went in by myself.
Yeah. For like pretty much every appointment you had. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but for this, the heartbeat check, I went in and, you know, they just couldn't find a heartbeat. And I think I was really surprised because all of my blood work was normal. Everything was doubling.
Yeah.
So like my placenta and body was doing everything it should be doing because my blood work was great, but that still doesn't tell you the health of like the fetus, which I think was surprising to us because you think of the normal, or I guess not the normal, but the stereotypical miscarriage, like maybe your blood work's off, it's low, like you start bleeding, whatnot. And that wasn't the case for us at all.
There were no signs.
No, there was nothing. Like I had a little cramping, but they told me that was kind of normal initially, but I didn't have any bleeding or anything. And she didn't really even tell me that I was miscarrying. She's like, yeah, I would say this is concerning. Do you want to talk to someone? I'm like, well, yeah, like, of course I do. Like, what do you mean? And I was trying to kind of get it out of her, but I think she was like not wanting to say it.
She didn't want to say miscarriage, but then what does she tell? Like, how do you not say it's a miscarriage? If there's no heartbeat and you're pregnant, Right. What does that mean?
What a terrible thing to have to read between the lines without getting a direct answer. Yeah.
So I did end up talking to, I think it was like a nurse practitioner, and I went in and I'm sort of like hysterical at this point. And I'm again by myself. So I was like, maybe this person's just going to like talk me down, like talk me through it. And she really didn't say a whole lot. She said, you know, that sometimes these things just happen and, you know, sooner or later you'll start to bleed. And I was like, okay. And then I walked away. She called me back and I was like, okay, maybe she's got more information for me. And she was like, you're O negative, right? So just make sure, like, when you do start bleeding, you give us a call.
Oh my God.
And I was just a mess. Like, I got to the car and I was just like, I'm not going to just hang out until I start bleeding. That's like the worst thing to do to somebody, to just wait. So we ended up having to schedule like a D&C because my body just wasn't, it's called a silent miscarriage. I had never heard of it before.
No.
And I guess it just goes to show like, there's just not a whole lot of education out there about miscarriages. I think and it's so common. I didn't really realize how common it is either. And I think, it was just kind of mind blowing, the whole experience.
It's like, there's no education for things that have to do with the folks whose bodies contain uteruses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fortunately. You
know, unfortunately. Yeah. Right. So we learn these things in the while it's happening to us, which what the fuck, especially if it's a common thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Come on. Ugh, I'm so sorry.
So, I mean, you know, that experience was obviously negative. And I think after that, it was a bit rough because we did have to kind of go through a lot of stuff before we could have our next IUI. It felt like so long. It was probably like 4 months, but it felt so much longer. I think we had to get, I don't even know, like HS, like some types of ultrasounds to make sure everything was clear and ready to go. And then everything was fine. And then at one point they're like, yeah, you can do it in 2 months. I'm the type of person, I'm like, okay, let's get back into this. Like, I just want to get back into it. Mm-hmm. And so they finally let us do a second IUI that September. So it was like May, and then September we had our second one, which didn't take. And then the third one took.
Were you able to do the third one the next month?
Yes, in October. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
yes. So like we kind of got through that. Summer was just, that was a horrible summer.
Yeah. But it was hard because we were in that place too. We were like, you know, it's not always commonly talked about too. And I think trying to figure out like, how do we share this news of a miscarriage? Like, or, you know, do we, and who do we feel comfortable with? And then just kind of relegating like people's responses to that. And
I was so hesitant because I just didn't know what to do. And I think when I did share it, I was pleasantly surprised at the responses I got because so many more people went through it than I realized.
Right.
Like my coworker went through it like twice and she had like talked to me about it. And it was just so eye-opening. So I think that actually gave me a feeling of like feeling better that like you're not alone in it.
It's so important to hear the stories. It's so important. That's, you know, the whole premise of this show. Like, we got to hear these stories so we know that we're not alone in this whole thing. Right. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we even had friends who, you know, even if they hadn't gone through that experience personally, you know, just kind of responding like you would if, you know, you've had a friend who's gone through a loss and, you know, sent us a meal or just for checking in a little bit more and how we were doing. And so, you know, I guess we did find that in most occasions it was kind of nice to like talk about it and share it and you know, because then we were getting support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So shitty thing happens. Terrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then 2 IUIs later.
Yeah. So then we got pregnant and the third try, and I was cautiously optimistic. Mm-hmm. I think I let myself breathe around the ultrasound at like the 20-week ultrasound. But like everything went well with the pregnancy. Like, I think I got sick for like a week. I probably shouldn't brag because there's so many people that are
like me, who have horrible pregnancies. Like the whole first semester. Yeah. Trimester. I said semester. okay. And so easy pregnancy.
Pretty fast labor. Okay. Yeah. The labor itself was pretty funny.
Well, you got there at like 7 centimeters dilated. So you did a lot of work at home. And then you got there.
They checked me out and they're like, oh, you're going to have a baby today. And I was like, get this out of me now. Like, get me an epidural. Because they cut you off at like, 8 centimeters or something.
Yeah.
We should tell the pillow story though.
Oh, yeah, you sent me home. I think I almost missed. I almost had daughter's birth because she sent me home to get a coffee. And then, like, I get back and, like, 45 minutes later, you're, like, three pushes and she's out.
So. Yeah, the nurse is like, you can take a nap. And I was like, these hospital pillows are not what I want to go to sleep. The nurse is like, you got time. Go home. Because we're, like, 10 minutes away from the hospital. Right. Yeah, she comes back and then the doctor came in and told us it was time to push him. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry. All right, I wanted to sleep a little bit. Like, yeah. And probably the first push, they were, like, told me to stop because... It was
well,
like
the doctor wasn't there
so
at
quickly.
That point. Yeah. And yeah. I think it was, yeah, I just saw the look on the nurse and the attendant's like face of like, oh, like
she's coming.
Yeah, we're going to deliver this baby if you don't. But yeah. Wow. Yeah. You should have seen the bag she brought for that. So.
Yeah. There's a lot of large bags that come with me.
Okay. So baby comes, everything's great. And, yes. And now how old is baby?
She's 19 months now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. 19 months.
Yeah. She's right. doing well. We're really lucky. She's awesome.
And
yeah,
well, she's a personality. She's
wrapped around her fingers.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. That's how it works.
Delegates
how it goes.
A lot of tasks.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. how it goes. But so Jill, in the beginning mm-hmm. of this, you said that, you know, Marie, you said, I wanted to do it. I wanted to experience. So I was going to go first. Does that mean you had already always thought you were going to have two? Jill, do you have the desire to carry and do the stuff? Do the thing?
I do not. You know, we definitely went into starting a family thinking we wanted to, you know, mostly just because, you know, we have sisters. We just kind of wanted, you know, we wanted siblings. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the idea kind of going into it was like, you knew you wanted to carry once and it was, you know, whether if you didn't want to carry again, like a sense of equity that I would kind of, you know, try it, like, yeah, tag your it. So,
and I also was like, I don't know if I want to do this twice.
Yeah. So then that was kind of the idea going into it. So I didn't particularly feel like an urge, and I still, you know, don't feel like an urge to, mm-hmm. you know, to carry on my own. So I was certainly happy when Marie wanted to the first time around. And yeah, we're kind of just in this place now of, you know, deciding whether we want to grow our family or not. I had kind of just within the past 2 years, like not trying to get checked out fertility wise, had gone to my doctors just for some concerns related to my period mm-hmm. and ended up finding out I do have, you know, some issues that would complicate the fertility process. Uh-huh. Yeah. About 2 years ago, it just, my periods were just getting like a lot worse, a lot heavier and more painful. I'd gone in for an ultrasound. They said I had fibroids, which was really common. Mm-hmm. Hey, why don't you go get another, you know, I got a sonohistogram, you know, just to kind of take a full picture of that uterus mm-hmm. and see what's going on, and discovered that I have this congenital abnormality. It's a unicornuate uterus.
Oh, I've heard of this.
I never heard of it before. This.
We hadn't heard of it before.
So explain it.
So just...
do you want to explain the look on the doctor's face?
So, yeah. So it's this like pretty rare, again, congenital abnormality. So I didn't inherit it, just like a random shuffling of how my uterus, you know, kind of came together. And I guess, you know, you have two parts of the uterus that are supposed to kind of go together and then kind of fuse in the middle. And with a unicornuate uterus, half of the uterus is like underdeveloped. And so that generally means that, you know, you usually have either one fallopian tube or two, and one of them's, you know, non-functioning. And, you know, it's generally like a smaller, and usually there's like fertility implications.
There's again, there's not like a whole lot of research.
Of course.
Like, I think we were trying to look it up and be like, because again, I'm the one, I'm like, I need information. I want science. I want research. And I'm like, there's really not a whole lot out there. Right?
Well, when you look on like the odds, I guess it's like less than 0.1%. Like it's like a pretty rare thing. Yeah. And as you said, you know, there's just also not a lot of research and focus on it, on women's issues in general. But so I guess it comes with like higher rates of miscarriage in the first and second trimester, higher rates of like preterm labor, and generally speaking, you'd have to do a C-section. I think it was just a crazy, you know, again, when you talk about like your interactions just with like the medical field or system as you're kind of, you know, doing this fertility piece, it was just like an odd way of finding it out. You know, most women, I guess, don't know that they have a unicoidal uterus until, you know, they've had recurrent miscarriages and then, you know, they're being seen in a, you know, fertility clinic.
Right.
And yeah, just the experience of the appointments when I found it out was just strange. You know, as a doctor doing the procedure, not like my OB, and, you know, as they're kind of doing it, they are like, you know, just so you know, you have this, you know, rare, it's a unicoidal uterus. And you know, and he says this, and I totally leaving the appointment, don't remember what he's told me. So I leave and I go to Maria. I'm like, he told me I have this uterus. It starts with a U. I don't know what it is. I got to Google it right now.
Draw a banana or something.
Oh my God. He's like, you know, people with this type of uterus can have these, he uses the phrase this rudimentary horn, but because he knows that I he's saying all these things that I'm like a deer in headlights, he kind of describes it as this like little secondary uterus that's like either connected or like open to or connected to the uterus.
So technically we have three uteruses between two of us.
Three uterus between you. Three uteri. Yeah.
We just got a little extra one in there. So he's like, I'm going to look for that one right now. Like, okay, sure. And then they're like, at that appointment, they said, I didn't have this kind of like, you know, non-connected secondary uterus, this rudimentary, closed off rudimentary horn. So he's like, now we're going to check your kidneys.
Oh.
Like, what do you mean my kidneys? Like, sometimes people with this type of uterus also either have one kidney or their Jesus. Kidneys are not in the right place.
What the fuck?
Right?
What the fuck?
What?
Like my kidneys
I'm sorry,
too?
What? Right. Like I'm going in for fibroids and now I'm like, I'm up a uterus and down a kidney. Like how does
what
this
the fuck?
How does this work?
And I have a unicorn inside of me. Like
and I have a unicorn. What like the fuck? I thought I had a good sense, right? You know, identifying as a woman, as a lesbian, good sense of my anatomy down there. Now I'm totally lost.
No, not like, at all.
No idea.
Oh my God.
Okay. My kidneys are fine. They're in the right place. Okay, I have two good. Of them.
Little mercies.
But yeah, right. Exactly. And then, yeah. And, you know, I think again, because this doctor in all good intention was, you know, could tell I was pretty overwhelmed and with the information he was giving and not understanding it, you know, decides to kind of draw a picture. And, you know, he draws, you know, the upside down triangle. Uh-huh. And, you know, this is the typical uterus. And then as he starts to draw mine, it's like, you know, kind of clear. It's not like this is a, you know, everyone is a different shape and size.
And they're all beautiful flowers.
So yeah. And he unfortunately uses, again, and I think trying to use the layman term, it's like a banana shape. And I'm like, oh, I'll never forget that. You said that now. That'll forever be ingrained in my mind.
Oh, that's helpful.
So yeah, but I guess that's, you know, the general, it's just a smaller size, which is why it tends to have more difficulty with fertility. I can get pregnant, but it's keeping, you know, keeping the pregnancy,
right.
And then, you know, the labor piece that can add some complications. So yeah, I'm still very much trying to figure that piece out. And now we're kind of in a place where we're leaning towards, you know, Marie, if we did want to have a second, Marie possibly carrying.
But I think there's also like so much like to think about too. I think a lot of families say, okay, I want two kids. And then they just kind of have a second.
Right.
I think for us, it was more thought. I guess we just put so much thought into it because there's so many different things that you like lifestyle or financial piece of it, or you know, like we mentioned getting a dog or like how much responsibilities do you want to have? But then also like, it would be great for her to have a sibling. I mean, we have siblings. So I think for us too, it was just like, you know, obviously the fertility stuff, but then also I think we're still in kind of two minds about where, how to move forward with it. Like maybe more towards a second, but yeah.
Because there's so many choices. Because you're queer, right? So there's choices to make. There's decisions to make. It's not like, you know, like heterosexual couples, they have the first and they know that if they have the second, it's going to be the same formula for the most part, right? You already figured it out that worked. We're going to do that again. It doesn't work that way with us. There's options, there's choices, there's decisions to make. And like, Jill, like a big question I have for you is, do genetics matter to you? Do you want a genetic tie to one of your children?
You know, it really doesn't matter to me. I mean, I don't have a genetic tie to Nora, mm-hmm. and it couldn't matter less. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I don't necessarily, again, feel the need to, you know, have a genetic tie to a possible second. Right now, it's really more, you know, what makes the most sense for us, you know, emotionally, in terms of, you know, mm-hmm. how do we go through this process of it, knowing it could potentially be, you know, more complicated if I'm carrying, but then, you know, you're not super pumped yeah. about the idea of just getting pregnant again and the emotional toll I think sometimes you have from that.
Yeah, I think for me, like, the pregnancy was fairly easy, but the aftermath, which I hear a lot about, is just like the breastfeeding. I'm not like the, I love to breastfeed right. and I didn't like that experience. Mm-hmm. The hormones are just kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I think it took me several months before I was feeling like myself again.
I think it took me a couple years, honestly.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, really only like now maybe I'm into like my like workout routine mm-hmm. and like getting back on track with things. But I mean, I just didn't realize how much pregnancy can really throw you for a loop, not really even just during, but the aftermath mm-hmm. of that, like mm-hmm. sort of like, you've got to get your sleep back. Your hormones got to get back to normal. You have to like start eating right. You kind of have to get, and I think going from like not being a parent to being a parent mm-hmm. is a massive change in huge, itself. So, huge.
And then you'd be going from a one kid house to a two kid house. And that's a massive mm-hmm. change right. too. Mm-hmm. But like, right. Also, did you use fertility drugs to get pregnant, or were they unmedicated?
No. So my doctor was kind of against that for me initially, just because they wanted to see if I could do it naturally.
Ooh, that's good.
Because all of my blood work and stuff was fine. So I didn't. They did do the second round of trigger shot, I think mm-hmm. it's called. Mm-hmm. And it actually didn't work for the second IUI, which I thought was weird, because it's almost like maybe your body wasn't ready yet to like ovulate, and the trigger shot kind of gets you there. And it didn't work for me at that point when I did that.
So you're kind of you're in between mm-hmm. places right now. You're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
I think we're leaning more towards a second, because I think with us, like what we've talked about is, will we regret this like 10, 15 years down the road?
Yeah.
Will we be at like Christmas and be like, oh, I wish there was another one here? Or I talked to my sister a lot about it, really close with her, and she's pregnant right now with her second. And I think when it came to my mind, and what she reminded me, is that sort of all of our negatives are more temporary things. You know, it's temporary loss of sleep, it's temporary emotional stuff and financial stuff, but sort of like to have a 5-year ahead of looking sort of ahead and where you would be at that point. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, we're leaning more towards a second, just because, I mean, I think just if you can deal with like the first like 0 to 3 years, maybe things will kind of get like even out. And I just don't want to regret it later. I think that's kind of where we're at with that.
I think that's a good way to look at it. What path will you regret the least? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I think we kind of, the past few months, we've kind of gone through this process. Like you said, it was like, first, it was like very like, you know, rational, like pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And neither one of us were like, had a real strong feeling either way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you could live in that space for months, if not mm-hmm. years, you know. And then it was just recently, you know, maybe like, I feel like there's been a few times where you've kind of gotten a little baby fever, or like,
oh my God.
Yeah. Or mm-hmm.
like the past couple months, I'm like, see a baby, I'm like,
where's my baby?
Definitely. My baby's running around now.
Or like Nora will be, you know, playing like with one of our friends' kids, and like playing is, you know, loose term. She could just be like within 6 feet of the kid. And we're just like, oh my God, she's going to be such a good sibling. Look at her, like right now, we've got to do it.
She like runs up and kisses all the babies and tickles their feet.
She's not going to do that for her sibling. Don't worry. She's not going to do that at all.
I know. Yeah, that's a very good point.
But so there's
those
like
ones
more,
aren't coming home with us. So.
No. So like a little more emotion kind of behind it that I think has like propelled us to like, you know, make some of these, like, you know, we have some follow-up like appointments kind of coming up just to kind of get the ball rolling. But then again, it's like roller coaster ride, because now that we're like, it's like hitting us, we're kind of taking some like concrete steps to start it. It's like, oof, this whole process again.
We're also not like the youngest chickens.
Like?
The clock is ticking. So you have to make mm-hmm. your decision. But here, if there's one thing I know, whatever mm-hmm. decision you make and stick mm-hmm. with is going to be the right decision. And and you have to be confident in that. And now, as we always say, I'm invested. Mm-hmm. So you have to let me know and you have to keep me posted. Yeah. And I'll tell all the listeners, because we're all invested now. We want to know, did you go for number two or not? Because I think a lot of our listeners at home grapple with the same exact decision, right? And it's a real serious decision, especially for our families. So I'm glad you talked it through with me. And now you have to tell us what you decide.
We will.
We'll definitely follow up.
All right. Well, thank you so much for telling this story. I'm so glad you reached out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. We love the podcast.
Yes, we're big fans.
Love is love.
Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. What a good story. But the conversation is not over, folks. Be sure you're following the show on all the socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at the Queer Family Podcast. You're going to get photos of all the guests there, some videos, and just, you know, all around fun from yours truly. Who doesn't want that? Don't miss out. You don't want FOMO. Nobody wants FOMO. And don't forget to join me on Patreon to help me create this super important queer content. You're going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to sign up and get that bonus content. And one more thing, if you love this show and want to represent your love for us and our beautiful families, you need to head to our shop and get some Queer Family Podcast merchandise. We've got so many designs, and you can put these designs on any product in the store. We've got t-shirts, mugs, hoodies, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to tpublic.com and search for the Queer Family Podcast. Or you can find the shop on our website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. There's so many ways, so many ways. All right, folks, that's it for this week. Tune back in next week for another episode all about family, but with gay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.